I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
With regard to Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's a colleague. I've always considered her a friend. Marjorie and I don't disagree, I don't think, on any matter of philosophy. We're both conservatives, you know, but we do disagree sometimes on strategy and with regard to what we put on the floor and when and those things. The Marjorie is frustrated by the last appropriations package, the spending bills, and you know what? So am I. I mean, here's the reality that we have to remind everybody, and you all know in the room because you're here every day, but some people back home don't realize, we have the smallest majority in U.S. history. We've got a one-vote margin right now. This is an historic moment. There's never been anything like this, and at the same time, we Republicans only have that majority in one house. We don't have it in the Senate, obviously, where Chuck Schumer and the Democrats are in charge, and we obviously don't have the White House right now. That's a Democrat there, too. So we are not going to get, because of that reality, we are not going to be able to do big transformational changes that we'd like, that we know are necessary. And, for example, the budgeting and spending, we're not going to get all of our priorities. We will never get 100% of what we want and believe is necessary for the country, because that's the reality. It's a math. It's a matter of math in the Congress.
It is a matter of math, and that is, again, House Speaker Mike Johnson explaining he and Marjorie Taylor Greene and other Republicans have some differences, and Marjorie Taylor Greene is among those leading the fight to say that you're not doing enough fast enough. I would agree, but again, you have to be realistic. I'm not going to give Mike Johnson a simple escape. I'm going to continue to hold his feet to the fire, but that also means other members, the other Republicans who are not stepping up and doing their part of the job. But even if all of them did, it's a one-vote majority right now for Republicans. We had Colorado Congressman Buck resign. We had Wisconsin Congressman Gallagher resign. And some of the others probably should resign, but they're still there. None of them began to go through the list. I don't have time for that. But at the same point, the reality is it's a one-vote margin in the House. The House, by the Constitution, originates any appropriations bills. And it goes to the Senate for confirmation. If you can't get something the Senate's going to accept and you don't control the Senate, which the GOP does not, you can expect it to be kicked back in your face, maybe a little bit of sand and some pebbles at the same time. The Senate right now remains the bully on the beach. Thanks for joining us. Here we are, hour number two of Larry Connors USA. We're here every Monday through Friday for you, right here from 6 to 8 p.m. And when we're on the air, we are streaming video. You can watch the program. You can watch it while listening. Go to Larry Connors USA Rumble, Facebook or Twitter, or News Talk STL, Rumble, Facebook or Twitter. And reminding you also, if you miss anything or you want to go back and pull it up or you want someone else to listen and watch, you go to LarryConnorsUSA.com, LarryConnorsUSA.com, or LarryConnorsUSA Facebook. You can find it, watch it at your pleasure, send it on to someone else. And let me take a moment to remind you again, this should be stressed repeatedly for you. We have two great FM signals, 101.9, 94.1, depending on where you are. They work best for you. But we also have a fantastic free app at News Talk STL. And that app, you can hear and listen to the program and every other program on News Talk STL anywhere, from anywhere. You're traveling to Rome. While you're there and you got some free time, you can open up and listen to the program. Japan, fine. Do the same thing. Australia. Yeah, mate, by all means, you can open it up. So anyway, glad to have you on board here for hour number two. If you missed the first hour, go to the podcast and pull it up. We're going to cover some of the material we did in the previous hour, but we always try to shift things up a little bit for you. But here we are, April 11, 2024. You know what's coming up Monday. No, not another solar eclipse. We've already done that. This will be a wallet eclipse. The IRS tax day, April 15th. I got noticed from my accountant last night, and whoa, how did that happen? Well, because I didn't properly plan, and I've got a big tax bill to deal with. Maybe I should go start a GoFundMe program, huh? Everybody's going to be facing that reality. Hopefully yours is not going to be as big as you thought it or feared it could be, and maybe it'll be better, and maybe some none. But it's that time of season again. That's the one thing about spring all of us hate. Of course, you can, again, I'm not a CPA, so do not take my word as your advice. You check with someone you trust. You can file an extension and delay actually filing everything. But on April 15th, the clock starts on whatever you owe, and penalties will be added if it's not all paid on that date. It's a plus minus about extending it. Maybe you don't quite have all the money now, but if you pay part of it, you buy it down, but they'll continue to pay, hit you with interest until you do pay it. But I wish you all the best on that extent. But more importantly, of course, we're very concerned about how our money's being spent. That's why we're having so many issues with things that we are not passing when it comes to the budget. And where Marjorie Taylor Greene's been very upset with Speaker Johnson. And I understand her anger, but again, the reality is, if you're standing in the middle of a railroad track and a train is coming at you, if you don't move, your chances are slim, none, and oh, hell, you just got run over by a train. That simple. Today, the FBI Director Christopher Wray was talking about an elevated threat as he addressed members of the House in a special hearing. He was pointing out that we need fiscal support to continue to tackle these threats. In other words, we'll need more of your tax dollars. Yeah, even more. And he points out in this address he made to the members of the House today, looking back over my career in law enforcement, I'd be hard-pressed to think of a time where so many threats to our public safety and national security were so elevated all at once. That's what he was telling the House Appropriations Subcommittee earlier. He said, we're at a point we cannot let up. This is by no means a time to let up or dial back. This is a time when we need your support the most. We need all the tools, all the people, all the resources, underline money there, required to tackle these threats and keep Americans safe. He said the immediate concern is individuals or small groups will draw inspiration from some of the events in the Middle East. And it should be added, and he did not directly deal with it, but all the illegals have come in the country that we had no knowledge of who they are, exactly what their plans are, but we know uncounted numbers of Chinese nationals have come across our border, and they didn't bother going through the normal ports of entry. They did not want to be seen or detected at all, but they were caught on camera. And the other day, about 200 were caught gathering to cross the border. And how many from the Middle East? We know we've got something like 150 nations represented, minimum, from all those who've come in. We have 1.9 million gotaways that we have no idea of, other than we saw them on the camera briefly and never saw them again. So one of the things that was big yesterday was, and Ray has been trying to push it through along with Speaker Johnson, a vote to reauthorize the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. It failed on the House floor. It's another sign of the Republican infighting. 19 Republicans broke with the party leadership, that would be Speaker Mike Johnson, and voted against the issue dealing with FISA. They're urging that they need to reform it again. The final vote yesterday, 193 to 228. And he said it's never helpful for the majority party to take down its own rule. this FISA is going to expire coming up fairly soon. And if it's not renewed, are we going to be under even more threat? Well, the concern we've had is that maybe it's been abused when we look at what's happened with Hillary Clinton and the Russian collusion and Adam Schiff and the lies that were told to federal courts to get wiretaps. I'm looking over this again, and I'm seeing that Johnson could bypass a rule vote by suspending the rules. It would allow a straight up or down vote on passage, but it would require two-thirds support. And I just told you that it got defeated 228 to 193. Donald Trump tweeted out the other night, "It was illegally used against me, many others. They spied on my campaign," which, in fact, they did. April 19, that would be next week, is a deadline to reform it or FISA goes dead in the water until some way it's revived again. Hardline Republicans don't want to reauthorize it without an amendment requiring the intel community to obtain additional warrants to get data of Americans. I have to agree with that. The other issue we have is, of course, what's going on in Israel. And the Biden administration continuing to try to tell Israel how it should be dealing with Hamas. Well, West Virginia Senator Manchin says, just imagine what you would do.
How would you expect Israel or any other country that's been barbarically attacked the way they were to say, at least give us back our hostages, give us our citizens back. We'll sit down. Maybe we can work through this, but we're going to wipe out Hamas one way or another with the least amount of infliction on the innocent citizens. It's horrible they're caught in between. I've tried to describe what I understand. When countries, civilized countries, go to war because of disputes, there's basically the rules of war. When we use our military machinery, our military might to protect our citizens. When terrorist organizations go to war or conflict, they use their innocent citizens to protect their war efforts. That's what you're dealing with, and you have to understand that.
We have to understand it. It's an entirely different war. We would not kill our American citizens or put them in harm's way if we were being invaded. And we could get to that point. And I'm talking about from the outside, not the inside, and yet that could still happen. But you got Biden saying, you should set a six-week ceasefire. Six-week ceasefire. Well, Hamas has already indicated they're not going to stop doing what they're doing. They'll take every advantage of that. And once again, Senator Manchin says, how dare we ask Israel to do that?
To ask them to stand down and allow Hamas to reload without getting anything in return? And I said, I'd be the first one that would encourage, let's basically, we got our hostages all back. Sit down. Let's work through this. Get the Arab and the Egyptians and the Arab Muslim countries to basically come into that part of the world. But to ask them not to get anything in return except stand down and allow them to reload, and making sure that we can identify and making sure that the aid that's being needed from food and necessities as far as medical is getting to the right people that need it and not the military that's going to take it and use it. Hamas has basically stripped that country of all the necessities they have needed to have any quality of life.
So Hamas is directly responsible. And the war continues because Hamas will not surrender and give up all the hostages. That's why it continues. All right, turning to our domestic front again, and that is trying to deal with the economy in our nation. And Bidenomics is showing some major rips and tears.
Tonight, Americans hoping to see the Federal Reserve cut interest rates as early as June may now have a longer wait, with inflation climbing for the third straight month.
The prices is too high.
The Consumer Price Index up 3.5% in March from a year ago, fueled by higher costs for rent, car insurance, clothes, medical care, and gas.
I used to fill it up for $35. It was a beautiful thing.
And now it's $45.
$45, and sometimes it's $60 between food and gas. It's had a big impact.
At Alexandria Jones Vintage Shop in Chicago, rent just jumped from $1,400 to $1,800 a month.
I have to do a sale. I have to bring people in just so I can be able to deal with what is, you know, the inevitable of my rent being $400 more than it was.
To combat inflation, the Fed increased borrowing costs to a 22-year high, making it more expensive to pay for a new mortgage, car, or credit card debt.
Speaking of credit card debt, I told you in the last hour that the core producer index was up more than expected. No surprise there. And that does not even include the basic core, your cost of your food and energy. And you go around and talk to people on the street. Well, you're going to listen to some of these people, and you can even put yourself in their shoes, because when you're out and you're looking to buy maybe a little meal that wasn't going to be that much, and all of a sudden you realize, I don't know if I've got enough money in my pocket. I might have to use a credit card just for this purchase. And here's a perfect example as you listen to some of these people.
I just paid over $10 for two burritos and a drink, whereas in the past, that would be half that cost.
It's not cheap. It looked cheap, but it's not.
Usually, you could go and you could get, you know, cheap value menu items and get full.
Remember when White Castles were 8 and 10 cents?
We just don't do it as often anymore because the prices are really ridiculous.
I could fill it myself for a dollar. You can't look at anything for a dollar at the fast food restaurant.
Meals are like almost $30 for just a burger and some fries. You probably don't want to pay only $5 for a meal.
I can't say I completely understand why those prices are as strong as they are, but yeah, the Taco Bell's bad, McDonald's, and you're not getting very good food, and it's not a lot of food either.
It hurts your pockets.
It hurts your pockets. So you don't have it in your pocket, so you pull out your credit card. Well, take note of this. Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia reports delinquency rates among American credit card holders are currently at an all-time high. A record number of active accounts have a balance of over $2,000. We're 3 years in the Biden presidency. Bloomberg points this out. More than 3.5% of card balances are at least 30 days past due as the end of December. Would that be you? Or are you close to that? Or someone you know? That is the highest figure in the data series going back to 2012 and up by 30 basis points from the previous quarter. The shares of debts that are 60 and 90 days late also going up. And stress among cardholders, Bloomberg points out, was further underscored in payment behavior as the share of accounts making minimum payments rose 34 points to a series high. You're making the minimum payments, you're barely doing anything to that debt. That's kind of what we're doing with our federal economy. $34 trillion in debt, and just servicing the debt interest is tough enough. I remember my granddad, according to my dad, granddad would say, you want to go to the movies? Here's a nickel. You can go to the movies. Now, of course, we're talking about a long time ago. But here's what came after that response. He said, I'll let you go to the movies, son. Here's a nickel. You can get in the movies. You can get some popcorn, something to drink. When you get home, I want my change. Change. Oh, for those days again. Or something near them. Coming up, there's some real concern about our water supplies. Do we have toxins in them? And then also Band-Aids. How many toxins are on those? Tom Wellington, Wellington Environmental, an expert on these things, will join us. Lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Question, do you know what vermiculite is? It is an insulation in the attics of hundreds of thousands of homes and public buildings. Looks like kitty litter, but often contains asbestos. Wellington Environmental is the largest company in the Midwest that can remove that hazard for you. Wellington has what is called the General, a powerful industrial vacuum that can suck vermiculite out of the attic. Hang on, there's something else you should know. Many of you might qualify for up to a $4,000 rebate. You should at least contact Wellington to see if you qualify. And here's something else. Wellington arrives at the time they give you, not sometime within 4 hours. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner. Better. Safer. Be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
No, you guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for covering the local and
global. People, this is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local? Really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9, 94.1
and NewsTalkSTL.com.
I have a personal story about why I trust McGuire Moving and Storage. A relative needed to escape an unhealthy relationship. Josh, Christine, and the McGuire team were understanding, even comforting. That's why I'm honored to endorse McGuire. Since 1935, McGuire's been moving and caring for families. So, moving a home, office, local, or long distance, McGuireMoving.com. McGuireMoving.com.
Hey, St. Louis, my name is Rob Carter. My new primetime show will explore the collaboration between corrupt media and our corrupted political system. From manipulated elections, open borders, mandated medicines, and unconstitutional lockdowns, what is going on? The Rob Carter Show. Let's talk about it on The Rob Carter Show. Join me weeknights from 8 to 10 p.m. on News Talk STL.
Rob Carter, live and local, weeknights at 8 on News Talk STL. This is News Talk STL.
I've been holding it so long. I've been sleeping all alone. Lord, I miss you. I've been hanging on the phone. I've been sleeping all alone. I won't kiss you.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. From time to time, I do have one of my sponsors on as an expert in their field, and I always want you to know and remind you they are a sponsor, full transparency here. And Tom Wellington is not only a sponsor, has been for a dozen plus years, but also a very good friend. Tom Wellington of Wellington Environmental. Tom, glad to have you on board, sir.
Hey, Larry, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I know you've been very busy. I appreciate you carving out time. I will tell you this, Tom, based on some of the commercials we've been running for you, I think everybody in the world now knows what vermiculite is.
That's right. Thank you, and I appreciate that.
Well, we appreciate your support. Now, I want to get into several issues, but let's deal with one that probably folks deal with on a more consistent basis, and kind of a scary thing, because if you get a cut or something on your hand or your arm or your child does, you may want to put something on it and basically end up putting a Band-Aid on it. And now there's word out that some of these Band-Aids might be containing what they would call toxins that will remain forever or something of that nature. Please explain.
Yeah, they're called it's an acronym, PFAS, chemicals, and they have that new moniker of the forever chemicals. And the EPA is really starting to crack down on this. And you're starting to see it more and more in the media as well. But what it is, it's a fluorocarbon that's attached either to perfluoroalkyl or polyfluoroalkyl substances. And these were used in so many different products, Larry. It was, you know, the carpet stain remover, and you've got the nonstick cookware, leather products, and like you said, Band-Aids. And they're really looking at the Band-Aids now. And the problem with these PFAS chemicals, the substance gets into our bodies, and our bodies cannot get rid of it.
That's what I'd understood. These forever chemicals, the reason they have that, they don't break down. They stay in the body?
Yeah, and they're doing all kinds of research right now. I know they're saying, well, it does. It is going to cause cancer. They don't know yet how much of it we can have in the body or where it's going to settle out in the body. So they're also setting standards for water, and they're going to be very, very low. You know how we usually see parts per million? Well, this is going to be parts per trillion.
Oh, my God. So, well, I want to get to the water issue, but before we leave this, the Band-Aid thing is something that parents are always going to be grabbing. And I noted that it also, if a woman is pregnant and she's got a cut and she puts one of these Band-Aids on, it could work its way into the fetus, causing harm to the baby, correct?
When I read that, too, I'm not actually doing any studies on it, but we're looking at it in wastewater, but you're right. That is what the most current study did say. Yes, sir.
Well, what are the options for somebody? I mean, are all Band-Aids, do they all have this for every chemical in them?
Well, here's where it is. I mean, if we look at it in two ways, is this chemical was developed mostly because of they wanted to keep something water resistant or oil resistant.
Okay.
And so, I mean, you can imagine that we've got everything from raincoats to protectants that are put on cardboard and paper. Like I mentioned, the nonstick cookware. So almost anything that it's the Tyvek suits that are worn in the hospitals, the respirators, everything has got this chemical in it.
And in any way it can get in the body, and certainly if it's an open wound, it does. All right.
Yeah.
Let's deal with the water, because I did note the other day that there were concerns about our water systems in general, and it's specifically Legionella surfacing again. Now, this is tracked back to the Legionnaires' disease, as it was originally named. Is that correct?
That's correct, in 1976, and that's where those droplets of water that got into the air conditioning system there in Philadelphia got those people sick, and many died. Just today, let me give you another one that just came out. A young girl attended a concert and became sick, put her in the hospital. She actually went into a coma, and then they found out about a week later that it was Legionella that was causing this pneumonia system in her body, and she had to have her legs amputated and one of her arms.
Oh, my God.
And here's where it went. It was the smoke. You know how at some of these concerts, they have that a cloud of smoke go up as part of the act?
Yeah.
It was contaminated.
Would that be common, or was this some specific event?
Well, it's common if it's untreated. For instance.
Well, I mean, if they're using, quote, the fog machine, which I assume you're talking about, is that something that was considered that was dispersing it, at least in this case?
That's correct. And they probably just didn't take good care of it, didn't clean it, didn't do all the, we find that happens with ice makers in hospitals and in nursing homes.
Well, some people are going to be more susceptible to begin with, right?
Well, you are right on the target that, if you've got, if you're immunocompromised, you're much more likely, if you breathe in these Legionella droplets or even put it in your mouth because you've touched the water, then you're going to most likely become sick with a similar to pneumonia. And sometimes it's called Pontiac fever as well.
I note that you, again, Wellington Environmental, you dealt with hazmat conditions of every type. As we have discussed before, pigeon droppings, they're obviously hazardous, and if you clean them off, you don't want to be inhaling it. But and for major institutions, they need to find someone like you, and obviously I'd recommend Wellington Environmental. But thinking you could just go out and start scraping these things off your house or your building without some protection, you're inviting to take in airborne particles that, once it's inside, all kinds of damage can happen.
Yeah, I've had two people I know that died from Legionella in hot tubs. One was a friend of my parents who was at a resort, and one was a guy that used to work here and went to Florida and was working down there and went to Colorado and was in a hot tub and got Legionella in his system and died. And he was a young, good-shaped person. So, I mean, it's something as simple as that. When those hot tubs aren't treated correctly, that Legionella doesn't lie dormant. It starts to colonize and can become a big deal.
You mentioned ice machines. That's a big concern, I would imagine. And then again, folks who have the kids or grandkids off of living in dorms, and especially if they're in a frat or sorority house, who's policing and making sure that everything's done properly?
That's true, yeah. If the university isn't taking care of those items in those places, it can be a real issue. I mean, and here's one. We just had numerous eyewash stations detected Legionella in those eyewash stations at a large corporation. And, you know, that's something you don't think about, but if they're not flushing those systems on a, you know, they every 6 months or so, that stagnant water in there is definitely going to develop Legionella.
Now, that the eyewash station, you're talking about that they get something in their eye, maybe a chemical or something, and they rush over there to kind of rinse out their eye, and they end up exposing themselves to something else. Is that correct?
A lot of these are hooked up to like a faucet at a sink in many corporations, especially the chemical corporations and people that are doing experiments.
Let me ask you something. I mean, I've related to the audience before. Decades ago, my family went to visit another family my dad knew, and they lived on grounds of a major oil refinery, chemical refinery. And I mean, you could almost not only smell it, but you could taste it in your mouth for days even after you left. It's almost like a oily taste in your mouth from the moment you got there. It's everything you swallowed and everything you...
Yeah.
I wasn't drinking. Those situations have been around for a long time. I assume some are cleaned up, but once you ingest anything, either by airborne or take it into your mouth, if you don't know what you're dealing with, right?
Yeah, it can be scary. And as you mentioned before, too, it depends on the condition of the person and, of course, how much they breathe in or ingest. So it makes a big difference as well.
I know a big part of Wellington Environmental is working with those universities on things like that, but also hospitals as well.
Oh, yeah. And luckily, the hospitals they have people that really take care of things and they understand, and they should. And a few years ago, everyone was forced to have a water management plan, which we write for hospitals and nursing homes and other big buildings, anything over a certain number of stories. And that makes them cognizant of what can happen to the water systems. We have one the other day. It wasn't one of ours, but it was on the East Coast, and the people in this hospital were getting sick because from the ice machines and from the showers.
Go to the hospital and come out sick. We've discussed that before, haven't we, Tom?
Yes, we have. Yes, sir.
We'll do it again. I would like to have an opportunity with you.
Thank you, buddy.
You bet. Tom Wellington, Wellington Environmental. And again, I point out, he is a sponsor. I'll make that very clear to you. Coming up behind the curtain at National Public Radio.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
John Beal knows that new roofing companies can look big and trustworthy on the internet, but the fact is 96% of new roofing companies go out of business within the first 5 years. John Beal has a reputation for excellence, reliability, plus lowest cost, best roof, best guarantee. Those here today, gone tomorrow roofers, they can't match John Beal. For home or business, trust my friend John. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
If you like premium cigars and spirits, take my advice. Check out Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield. The Lit Cigar owners just got back from a major convention in Vegas, and now every day, Lit is getting shipments of special cigars that will certainly amaze you. Check the Lit Cigar Facebook, staying on top of special events. Also, Lit can host a private event for you, your friends, your business. LitSTL.com. LitSTL.com. Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield.
This is News Talk STL.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You write that NPR's former CEO, a guy called John Lansing, encouraged sort of an activist mentality in the newsroom. He wrote this in a note to staff. When it comes to identifying and ending systemic racism, we can be agents of change. Listening and deep reflection are necessary, but they're not enough. They must be followed by constructive and meaningful steps forward. I will hold myself accountable for this. Now, why that kind of statement from the head of a news organization, especially like NPR, surprised you?
Look, it's understandable. These are incredibly painful, awful times, and the murder was horrific. And it was understandable, I think, that he would have that perspective expression. But, you know, ultimately, when you look back on it, it's a pretty big thing to say that America is infected with systemic racism. That's a big deal to say that. And I think it would have been the right time to investigate that. To what extent is America infected with systemic racism in housing or law enforcement or education? You know, that would be a great starting point for reporting, looking for evidence, figuring out, is this true? Is it not true? To what extent? Mm. But I think sort of a tone had been set instead.
Well, the questioner was Barry Weiss, host of a podcast, Honestly, interviewing NPR senior business editor Yuri Berliner. As he pulled back the curtain on what's happening at public broadcasting, NPR and public broadcasting system as well, and they each get federal tax dollars, and pointing out that the leader of NPR had basically said, we need to start being more activist. I have no problem with, in fact, I'd even advocated at one time in a newsroom where I worked, a TV newsroom, that rather than just reporting, we can become activists. I believe there is a reason and a calling for doing that, but you've got to make sure it's clear that that's what you're doing. You're no longer just reporting. You're pushing an agenda. And as long as you make it clear that we're pushing this agenda and you're not putting under the label of news, then it'd be acceptable if you properly frame it. Give you a perfect example. One of the TV stations I worked for years used to have a commentary at the end of the 5 o'clock report. The general manager would come on. There'd be a folding number of a number four, channel four, from the arch would turn into a four and basically unfold, and the general manager would come on and make comments on whatever he chose. Minute and a half, I believe it was a minute and a half. And then at the end, that would always tag out that if you have opposing views or those responsible parties with opposing views, contact us. And they had to get the same amount of time. When Robert Hyland ran the KMOX radio in St. Louis, he did the same thing. The problem is you get some people coming forward, and they might have four or five different views. Maybe they're not really, let's say, gun control. Let's just talk about that. Then maybe the general manager has the attitude that Second Amendment stands clean and clear and let it go at that. Well, someone comes up and says, yeah, but we need to have this put in place in addition to it, or this has to be considered. Another one says, not on that, but we need to also do this. And then he ends up with four or five others. So each one of them get that minute to minute and a half. They have to get the same length of time at the same placement of time as the original commentary was given. You can't run the station manager at 5:30 p.m. or 5:28 and a half before CBS News p.m., and then you run the answer at 5:28 a.m. the next day. That doesn't work. You got to be absolutely on target. But it was always clearly broken away from the newscast. The news would end. The newscasters would say, that's the end of the news. Thanks for joining us. CBS News will be coming up. And then it would go to the commentary. Same thing with the KMOX radio. It was always separate from the news. Nowadays, the lines are blurred, and intentionally blurred, because they're trying to fool you and pull the wool over your eyes. And unfortunately, and this is not a diss against you, but if you're not really schooled in journalism in total, you might fall into those. And I have to watch now with this AI CRAP that's out there to make sure that what I'm pulling up has been validated, authenticated by several sources before I put it on. And I have no doubt at some point I'm probably going to be caught in one of them by mistake. But NPR gets public funding from you, your tax dollars. Out of the $300 million budget, they say, we only get 1% from taxpayer dollars. Well, that's true, except that they're ignoring some other issues of where they do get money, and it's been noted in numerous sources, one of them pointing out that they get 8% of revenue from federal appropriations via corporations for public broadcasting. That's from their affiliate stations. They get 10% from colleges and universities, which are publicly funded. Another 5% from federal, state, and local governments. You got 23%, not 1%. That's just NPR. PBS gets even more, totaling up to 39%. And they actually get 15% direct from the federal government. So they are owned and operated by the federal government to that extent. So when I call not just them, but the other news sources that supposedly don't get any federal dollars, state-controlled, I'm not just joking entirely. So Barry Weiss, in this interview with Uri Berliner, asked about this issue and the public trust issue.
Do you see NPR and its shift to the left as sort of singular to that organization or of a piece with a much broader trend that's happening inside legacy media institutions?
I think it's much broader within legacy media organizations. I think it's very commonplace. For me, what's different about NPR is we are a public service institution. We have a public mission, and we have a show called All Things Considered. We have a fellowship called the Reflect America Fellowship. So I think we have a particular obligation to reflect America, to understand people from all different outlooks, to bring up things that might be uncomfortable for our progressive audience members, to be a little more daring, to take a little more chance, to be more curious about things that don't fit the narrative. So I think at NPR it was a particular problem because we're a public institution. And you know, for years, I think a lot of people felt NPR was like a national trust.
Yeah, like we felt the FBI was working on behalf of us, the American people, and CDC. And all that trust has been broken. And Uri Berliner pointed out during the Russian collusion story development, they hinged everything on California Congressman Adam Schiff.
And for us, you know, I think a lot of newspapers use documents or anonymous sources. We really latched on to Adam Schiff. He was like our muse to the Trump collusion story. We had him on constantly.
I'm going to bring in House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff. Congressman, good to have you back.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Democrat Adam Schiff of the House Intelligence Committee, who joined us once again. Congressman, good morning.
I counted 25 times. You know, and in most of those conversations, he sort of alluded to evidence he may have had or sort of teased out, you know, he was colluding or the campaign was colluding with Russia.
So do you agree that nothing happened from this meeting that we've been discussing all week?
Not at all. This is very significant. Here you have the Russians reaching out to the campaign, the inner circle of the campaign.
And then the Mueller report came out and no collusion and the story kind of disappeared. But to me, that was like a time for like, what went wrong? Why did we miss this? Like, despite our feelings about Trump, this is a story we should have sort of treated differently.
Yeah, they should have. In fact, they should have asked tough questions. But they never asked tough questions of Adam Schiff. And, of course, the legacy media, as he's referring to, ended up hiring a lot of those who were coming out, like CIA chief and others, saying, oh, yeah, that's going to be bad. We can't tell you what took place behind closed doors, but it's going to be bad for Trump when it's all over. And in the end, no, it wasn't. And in fact, in the end, Russian collusion proved to be, even according to the CIA director, as he told Obama and then Vice President Biden, Attorney General, and the FBI director at the time, it's all part of a political trick campaign by Hillary Clinton and the DNC, Democrat National Committee, bought and paid for. And Hillary's campaign and the DNC had to pay fines for what they were doing. And yet the administration, the Obama administration, never called out that it was a lie. And they knew it was. And if NPR had word of that, they didn't bother with it either. What they did do long before Trump came on the scene, back in 2010, remember Trump came on the scene just before the 2016 elections. I mean, he'd been on the scene, people knew him, The Apprentice and everything, but not as a political animal and certainly not running for president. Juan Williams was with NPR, and he got the boot, and the way he explains it, it wasn't just that they were showing him the door, they were stabbing him in the back.
Not only did they fire me, they called me a psycho. I mean, they said horrible things about me quite publicly. So no, it doesn't surprise me what he had to say. In fact, I think, and this of course was before Trump lore, so they are very much an insulated cadre of people who think they're right. And they have a hard time with people who are different. So for, even for me, and I don't think I'm any wild-eyed conservative, but they thought I was too conservative a black guy for their kind of company. And, you know, so I said something, you know, way back about, you know, gee, after 9/11, I got nervous in the airport with people dressed in Muslim garb, and I went on to defend the right of Muslims to have a, you know, to build property near Ground Zero, and yet they threw me out the door. So this doesn't surprise me at all. I think what you're seeing now, especially after Trump, is that we live in a very polarized media landscape, and they have established a beachhead on the far left.
Yeah, they established the beachhead, and they're defending it. Now, Yuri Berliner coming out and unveiling all this was part of a piece he had written titled, I've been at NPR for 25 years. Here's how we lost America's trust. And as you were listening there to some of the reasons as to why and how. And in the midst of that is not just NPR and not just PBS and the dollars they get from your tax monies in various ways, but the illusion that they are to be trusted. Therein we have an issue about basic ethical journalism versus what they've been doing.
You know, I came up under old school journalistic rules. You don't donate to campaigns. You don't march on behalf of political causes. A lot of the journalists I look up to have never voted in an election because they understand that we are subjective people, that we all have our biases, but they want to maintain as much objectivity as possible. And I was looking at Instagram stories the other night, and I noticed a writer that I always read in The New Yorker, you know, with her baby at a anti-Israel protest, waving a Palestinian flag. And I'm like, wow, like, that's just going to color the way that I read her stories, seeing that. And, you know, that has just become something that is now extremely normative among legacy journalists. And it's a shift that I think is actually like quite profound.
I totally agree. I think that there are a lot of journalists now who feel like they are obligated to do stories that are aligned with their sense of justice or to try and undo power structures. And if that means forgetting about the traditional values of fairness or objectivity, so be it, as long as the objective is to change the world in the way that these journalists want. To me, you know, I think the idea, I'm probably an old-fashioned fuddy-duddy, but the idea that what we do in journalism is we have our opinions and we have our outlook, but we try and park them to the side. That's basically the starting place for the job. I mean, I think of the Sebastian Younger, the a great quote about journalism. He said, you know, genuine journalists are willing to destroy their opinions with facts. And I think we see the opposite now often, is that opinions are pushed the story and that facts are ignored if they're inconvenient or they undermine the narrative.
In other words, they are no longer, quote, journalists. They have become advocates. That's okay, but label yourself that way. Those who continue to claim that I'm a journalist, no, you're not. If you're a journalist, you'd be able to tell the story straight and factual without your personal input. You were hearing Barry Weiss point out that saying I, a particular writer for the New Yorker or New York Magazine, whichever one you named, that I like reading, but then I see a picture of her waving a PLO flag on a demonstration holding her baby, and it changed my view of her and questioning articles going forward. When it came to my life, I had a lot of friends who would run for political office. They really wanted me to endorse them or say something or appear at a campaign. I said, I can't do it. What can you donate? I can give you some anonymously because that's allowed, but I can't put my name on anything. And if you're elected, I'll be one of the first asking you tough questions. They weren't so sure they wanted my friendship anymore. And when some people learned that I was Christian, they questioned, well, so you're putting everything through the Christian viewpoint. And I said, well, first of all, my obligation is to God more than journalism, so I guess you could be right. But at the same time, I'm doing my best to be fair. I would never advertise as a news anchor a particular car or restaurant, but if I drove a particular car or ate a restaurant, that became kind of an endorsement, didn't it? Because you can't live in a vacuum. But when you go to go on the air as, quote, a journalist, a news anchor, news reporter, you've got to push those aside, as Yuri was saying. You can't put those in front and make that your agenda. It's not hard to understand. It's hard to have it adopted and executed properly nowadays. I do remind you of our pledge, one nation under God.